when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 49.
No, actually, Glenn, it's number 50.
Of Prepping 2.0, which is a joint production and a joint episode with RV Prepper Podcast. Shelby, can you describe where we are recording this?
We are at a super secret squirrel location. RV. No, it's not.
We're in Sandpoint, Idaho at the Preparedness Expo in somebody's RV. We don't even know them that well. And I think this might be a bad idea, but here we are, and we are having a great time, and it's a lot of fun. And we're going to do this jointly, so this is going to be very conversational, very freestyle with
David Helms.
David Helms of
RV Prepper.
Yeah, exactly. So here we go. Let's go with this. There'll be a little bit less of the usual administrative stuff that you guys are used to, you know, hearing about the top 100, because we don't have our magical whiteboard that is indeed magical and guides
us. It is very magical.
It is magical. And for those of you that are concerned that Shelby is not caffeinated enough, that was a problem.
Oh, that's not a problem.
That is not a problem right now. So we're bouncing off the walls.
I'm a little zingy.
You are a little zingy. So let's, I'd like to get David on board here and tell us about his podcast and what he does, because the reason we're doing this is that prepping and RVs and how they relate to each other is a big topic. And we are, and we'll talk about this more, we are new RV owners, and we have thought about, but not really done much about, how to utilize our RV in a prepping capacity. So David, we're kind of your newbies, and you can answer our questions and tell us things that will be of interest to a lot of RV owners who are maybe not, you know, full-time RVers. They don't live in their RVs all year round or something, because RVs and prepping are a natural fit. So take it away. What do you think?
Oh, thanks. It's a great subject to it, and it's the reason why I decided to start doing this podcast. When you have an RV at your disposal, you have a lot of control when things go out of control. So you can take that RV and you can bug out. You can drive away from things like wildfires they had in Northern California.
Yeah.
Earthquakes in your neck of the wood. We have fires over there in Montana. When I live down in the Southeast, we have hurricanes. And you have your rolling house that you can take with you. And knowing how to fit that system out with what you need to survive and thrive while you're out on the road, that's what it's all about right there.
Well, and there are different types of RVs, different classes. Can you describe to people just a quick overview? I mean, if you're out there, here's the person we're targeting this towards. Many of our listeners do not own RVs, and they're thinking about it. What should they think about when they're thinking, hey, is an RV a prepping thing or a partial prepping thing? It could be partially recreational and fun, could be partially for prepping. What should they be thinking about? What kind of thing should they think about getting?
Well, it all depends on, of course, it always comes down to budget that you can work within that. But as far as what their lifestyle is and how do they want to go about and travel, it can be as simple as a pop-up camper. Or we have people over here not too far away from us that slept in the back of their truck last night with a topper camper. And tent campers around, bumper pulls that you see, which they call travel trailers. This is a fifth wheel that we have now. Then you have Class Cs that are built on the van chassis. Being like the Ford Econoline vans and things like that. Then you have Class Bs, which are built on your Mercedes-Benz and Sprinter chassis, something like that. And then you have your Class As, which can be either gas or diesel, and those are the ones that are built more like a bus.
And so those are the ones that have an engine with them. It's all one piece. And then there are the trailers, not a trailer. I'm not sure what the term is.
But I can call them a travel trailer, a bumper pull travel trailer. This is a fifth wheel travel trailer because it uses a special hitch up in the bed of the truck. And so there's options that you have with them that way.
What are some prices that some of these things would be? Because that's going to be the first question people have. Hey, I mean, you mentioned Mercedes. Pretty sure I don't have Mercedes money, because we found an amazing deal on an RV we might describe later.
Can I jump in?
Yes.
It's not an RV.
You're so
it's
right.
It's a camper that is pulled behind a truck. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
it's actually a recreational vehicle.
Okay.
But you can, I mean, it depends on what you want to call it. We still call this a coach. And we came from a Class A diesel pusher, which was deemed a motor coach in the industry. And, you know, but these still get deemed called a coach. It all depends on what you're comfortable with, what you want to call it.
So what are some prices of things? And for things that are durable and going to be good and not be all messed up and, you know, water leaking and all of that other kind of stuff, stuff that's going to be a good buy and something you're going to have for a number of years and is actually going to work, because that's all that matters.
There's a tremendous amount of used RVs out on the market with many years on them. And what I mean, like more than 15 years. And you can spend as little as $1,000 or you can spend $40,000 on something like that. It all depends on how it was taken care of, okay? And if you don't use your RV, it's going to rot on you. But if you use it, it weathers better because you're taking care of it and doing maintenance on things. Mm-hmm.
And you're having heat on in it, which is helping it. You've got the windows open.
Exactly.
And RVs are like any other kind of vehicle or shelter. They need to be maintained. What can folks expect with maintenance costs and maintenance?
Well, usually what you want to think about is maintenance costs. What you have for the year is probably, if it's non-motorized, you got to worry about your tires. You don't want your tires blowing out on you. So tires will age out on an RV faster than what they will wear out. And by having your trailer, travel trailer, fifth wheel, overloaded past capacity will cause you to have more blowouts. Also, driving that vehicle over the suggested speed limit on the speed rating on the tire will also do it. Now, I know you guys have been driving up and down the highway, and you've had one of these fifth wheel toy haulers just right on by you, about 80, 85 miles an hour. The best tires are only rated for 75, and they have to stay within a certain weight range. And they heat up and they blow out, and then that's when the big accidents occur. So I was just going to say,
we've all seen those on the side of the road where a camper's on the on its side and the content spilled everywhere and all the kids are crying. Those are not pretty pictures.
No, they're not pretty pictures. And most of the time it's like most plane crashes and commercial jets, it's usually pilot error. That's what happens with that. So you have to pay attention to how you have it loaded, and that will wear out tires faster if you don't have it loaded properly. But on a, say, a trailer, like if we look over here to our right, it's a bumper pull travel trailer. It's got two axles on it. So you're looking at four tires about every 2 years. So you're probably figuring about $400 a year for that, for those tires, between those two. Repacking the wheel bearings, a couple of $100. And just keeping it clean, you know, soap and water, that's really all it takes. It doesn't take a whole lot to do it, as long as you run the appliances in it and keep them running. Now, everybody says, oh, RV refrigerators go out so fast. That's true if you don't use them. Mm. Our motor coach that we just got rid of was 17 model years old, and it had the original refrigerator in it because it got used a lot.
Mm.
And we had one little problem with it, which was a circuit board, $200. It was done.
So some costs, you mentioned $1,000. I mean, I imagine it's going to be like anything else. You can get maybe a good deal, or maybe, are we talking typical trailers or something? Tens of thousands of dollars, thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you can go from that $1,000 range up to, you know, $30,000, $40,000 on bumper pull travel trailers. Fifth wheels, you can go from $29,000 all the way up to $300,000.
Hmm.
Class A motor coaches, you know, gassers, you can go from about $88,000 to about $150,000. And then diesel pushers start at about $160,000, and they go all the way up to, if you go to the Prevost cars, at $2.8 million.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, just try to check, Glenn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you got a phone, I can get you a loan. No ups, no extras.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, what's the interest rate?
$2.98, single bill cash.
Okay. Sadly, I believe you.
Yeah.
And I'm tempted to do it. One of the things that we ran into, and I should, you tell the story.
About how we got our camper?
Yeah.
I call it a camper because that's how I traditionally know them. And it, now that I just realized, I can call whatever I want.
That's right.
We should name it.
We talked about that when we got it. So what happened was is a friend of yours.
Yes.
Had a camp, and I'm sure this is a typical story you probably hear a lot, David, is how old is it? 20?
It's 30 years old.
30 years old.
1989.
1989.
Ronald Reagan was president part of 1989.
Yes, he was. And it had only like two owners, and I'm going to butcher the details. You're going to correct me, I know. But the most recent owner had it, and it just sat for several years with a tarp over it in a backyard.
Yeah, a really well-maintained, and the tarp was very stout. It was It was very well maintained, and you could tell that the furnishings were sort of dated. It looked like something in 1989, but we don't care about that because the uses we'll put it to, which we'll talk about in a moment here, the uses, prepper uses for an RV. And
we got it for $1,500 too.
$1,500 and
28-footer.
28-footer. And we took it in to get it maintained because I was like, oh, geez, there's going to be so much wrong with it. We ended up spending about $1,100 for a variety of maintenance things. You know, I mean, cleaning out the water tank. Yeah, actually, just a little bit of exterior resealing. The roof was in great shape, and the guy came out, and he couldn't believe it. This is a 30-year-old RV, and you were talking about these things can hold up pretty well if you take care of them. The previous owners took very good care of it, and it needed nothing. There were no leaks. He was amazed. 30 years old in Western Washington State, for goodness sakes. And it was great. And so that's a pretty small investment.
So, and here's the other thing, because we took it to like an RV repair place and we basically said,
fix whatever needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Can you, we kind of wanted just a kind of an overhaul here. And then we went to another RV place to look for just some parts or whatever. And the guy was like, I'd buy this for $3,000 because it is in such great shape. And people are looking for those kind of more affordable ones. And this one was in great shape. So I think we got ourselves a deal, but it hadn't been run. So what you're talking about with the tires, we did replace the tires on it because of it needed to be run. And I'll tell you what, we haven't even tried the appliances and I don't know that I want to because they look a little, they've been sitting for a while and there's a few burn spots and things like that. So yeah.
Which, and we'll get into this, I think, and we'll ask David about this, prepper uses for an RV. We're not going to be having big luau's in there, but we'll get to that. And then as far as Costco, because that's a big thing that folks are always wondering about, especially when it comes to something that a lot of people don't already own, and we didn't until recently, it's what's this going to cost? The other cost, and I didn't figure this out. And so, yes, I made a mistake, and it's okay. And we can admit that. I admit it all the time, is that I didn't have a concept of what tow weight was. Mm. So I have a, not a small, but a medium size pickup. And I remember when we got the offer on this thing and the friend of a friend, we'll go ahead and say it. We were actually, we were having high tea at the Empress Hotel in Victoria, for real. And I wasn't really able to look up a lot of stuff on the internet. And so the question was, how much does this trailer weigh? And the answer I got, and go ahead and laugh, I mean, you cue up the laugh soundtrack that you have, was 3,000 pounds. And, okay, there we
nice.
Go.
Nice.
This is a well-produced show. And it turned out to be a lot more than that. So I call up my dealership where my truck is, and I say, can this truck, here's the VIN number, can it pull 3,000 pounds? And they said, oh, absolutely. It can pull 5,000 pounds. So I said, problem solved. Well, guess what, guys? And this is what learn from our mistakes thing. Go ahead.
What your truck can pull
and should pull
are two different things.
It can pull it for a while, but the transmission is not going
become object. It's going to object at some point. And you can, and the wear and tear, what we realize is the wear and tear on your truck would not be able to handle that.
So found out what it actually weighed, which was closer to, I believe,
8,000 pounds?
That's the number, 8,000 pounds.
I know, when he said 3,000 pounds, I was like,
seems light.
28-foot camper. Huh, okay.
But again, when you're trying to like find these things out, we were literally having high tea, which if you're ever in Vancouver, Victoria, British Columbia, I highly recommend.
Highly recommend.
Like where the queen
it
has
was
tea.
It was real. Our vacation last summer.
It was
summer.
Great. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, so then I said, I think I need to get a truck dedicated for this trailer.
Well, there was also about 10 minutes of, we need to sell this camper because we're not going to use it.
Oh, and we found, yes, and more on that. Yes. Yes. We'll talk about that. So anyway, with the cost thing, I realized I needed to get a truck to haul the camper, which as it turned out, I needed a bigger truck anyway. And I know what you're saying. David's starting to laugh. He's like, oh, a guy's saying, oh, I need a bigger truck for hauling rocks and all of that stuff around. We have a 5-acre parcel and we have to maintain our own road and that sort of thing. It's turned out to be excellent because we have so many uses for this heavier truck. It's a 1996 Dodge Ram V10. And
thing's a beast.
It's a beast and it's great and it can haul this thing. But here's the thing, everybody out there listening and thinking about costs. another thing I did not foresee. Go ahead and start laughing. I mean,
Steve,
you guys,
we were, again, I want to jump in here. At the expo that we've been at today, one of the questions during the Q&A is, what is something that, a mistake that you've made that you've learned from? We're telling you all of them right now that we've learned from the whole camping thing. So go ahead.
Yeah, so as a V10, it turns out, okay, and I'm going to put you on the spot, David, without hauling anything, what kind of gas mileage do you think this truck gets?
12 to 14.
Eight. Yeah. 8 miles a gallon. Guess what? With an 8,000-pound trailer, what kind of gas mileage do you think this rig is getting?
Eight.
Four. 4 miles per gallon. And that's on like premium gas. So long trips across the country at 4 miles a gallon will not be happening. And so now we keep it in our little area, and we'll talk about uses in a moment. But these are all things that people listening
you need to
should
hear.
Probably think
yes.
about. So, David, what are some thoughts on like how to avoid this other than listening to this podcast and realizing that you got to pull it and you need to have actual figures on weight and don't just try to do this while you're at high tea?
And when somebody offers you a great deal on a camper, consider these things.
Yeah.
I'd have taken the great deal on the camper.
Yeah.
I mean, the truck we had before this one, it was just a 1500, a K1500 GM. Well, it wasn't going to pull this, so we had to go to another truck, and that'll pull 19,200 pounds.
It's a beautiful truck. Tell everyone what it is.
It's a 3500 HD Duramax diesel.
Yes.
It's got 440 horsepower and 900 foot-pounds of torque.
I love how he says that with that southern accent.
Yeah.
900 foot-pounds of torque, y'all.
Now, we just did a trip down to Las Vegas and back, but we didn't tow this. We went down just to go listen to George Strait's thing, okay?
I think you should.
That would be a good reason to go to Las Vegas.
I thought it was his last tour like 10 years ago.
He only does a few shows a year in Vegas now.
Okay.
It's really great, and he sounds better than I heard him years before. But we average 24 miles to the gallon in that.
Without any,
but we're running 85 to 88 miles an hour.
Wow.
And it was comfortable.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad.
Well, you can imagine a 20-year-old Dodge with 197,000
miles. With a 30-year-old camper on it.
Camper. Yeah, we paid. We didn't pay much for that truck, and it's been a great truck. It was well-maintained, but it was a thing.
You learn your limitations with it. Yeah. Off mm-hmm. you go with it. I mean, it'll mm-hmm. get you where you need to go to.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to maintain. That's the good thing about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So our point is, and David would, I'm sure, you know, put an exclamation point on this, figure this stuff out and have a plan for the trailer. And then there's also the, I don't know the terms, I apologize, like the tow pack, like the hitch to make sure the sway bars.
Correct.
To make sure that, and describe
weight,
what that
weight
is.
Weight distribution hitch.
Yes.
It's a couple of arms. It comes off of your hitch mount, it chains up to the trailer yoke itself, and it keeps it from fishtailing behind you as you go down the road. And another thing you can think about, too, is you can get airbags to put under the back that goes under suspension, okay? And it'll raise it up when you're towing it with some air so it doesn't sag down on you. Mm-hmm. So even with that tow rating, I put airbags on that truck because when this is on it, it squats a little bit, and I would rather have more control and better fuel mileage. So I spent $600 on some airbags. It got lifted up, and we just motor on down the highway.
And that was something that, speaking of costs, it was, $600 for some really good sway bars, because I wasn't going to goof around with that because I didn't want any problems. I didn't want to die. That's not a good survival plan, by the way.
Sure.
Not a good survival plan. And then as far mm-hmm. as another cost goes, there is, and you can tell everybody what it's called, basically a braking assist thing that was already in this Dodge that we bought because the guy had used it for hauling his trailer. So tell folks about that.
You got an electric controller for your trailer brakes is what you have on there, and that's worth its weight in gold. What it does, it sends an electrical signal when you step on the brake, and your brake lights light up, sends an electrical signal to the electric brakes on the trailer and says, hey, it is now time for you to work.
So then it activates the brakes on the trailer, not just the truck, because that may not be able to hold it back if you're going downhill and it weighs, I don't know, 8,000 pounds.
Without anything in it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and that's what it does. And you have a controller on there where you can make it brake a little harder or brake it a little softer.
Yeah, and it's amazing. That is a very sensitive thing. I played with it, and it was very, very receptive. And that's a couple $100 installed.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when you go downhill, you want to make sure that you pay attention to the grade of the hill. Downshift on the transmission. Your transmission can take it. Those transmissions are tough. Just take it slow. Take your time. Don't let anybody get you in a rush. Now, that's easy for me to say because my bride will tell you that I always worry about who's behind me and whether I'm holding them up or not. So, yeah. You know, we just move on down the highway at our speed. And when we drive down the road, we only run about 60, 65 miles an hour. That's all we do.
Unless you're going, you know, without a trailer to go see George Strait.
That's right.
And these speed demons are going bananas.
It's foot on the pedal and the pedal to the wall.
What are some other items that people need to think about as far as costs when they're thinking about this system? We may have addressed them all, but I want folks to know what all is involved. So candidly, don't make a mistake like I did. Now, it turned out well. We'll talk about that we go after the break here in a couple minutes. But what are some other costs that people need to think about?
Well, the other cost is making sure you keep your roof cleaned and treated. So in other words, to keep that, whether you have it's called EPDM, it's an electro something, or whether you have a PVC roof, keeping it clean because it gets dirt onto it, it'll make it rot prematurely, it'll move away. So keeping it clean and putting a treatment on it so it stays soft and supple, there you go. Other than that, I mean, just greasing the wheel bearings and stuff, just enjoy it. Off you go with it. And you might have a hot water heater on there that has an anode system in it, just like what you do at home. Some of the hot water heaters today are stainless steel and they don't have anodes. So that would probably be the only thing you need to change. And on yours, you're probably only talking about every 2 or 3 years and it'll cost you a whopping $25.
Right. So those are basically the things, the cost of the trailer, the cost of a sway bar, mm-hmm. the cost of something to tow it, which you may already have, but think about it. And let's see, what else were we talking about? Some brake controllers, maybe some airbags. And then as far as the stuff to put inside it, that's pretty easy because it's going to be, and this is a nice segue here in about a minute to our next segment about what to use the RV for prepping. It's basically stuff you already have. I mean, there's no special like RV silverware, right? I mean, it's just use anything, you know?
It's called plastic utensils.
Yeah, that's right.
That's we do dishes in our house.
You don't have to wash. If you ever want to have fun, by the way, I'm curious what you think about this. Go into Camping World and just seeing all the stuff that's for RVs and going to yourself, this doesn't need to be for RVs only. You know what I mean? This is regular stuff. There are exceptions. The paper plate dispenser, where you put the paper plates in and they come off like the lids for drinks at McDonald's, that is worth its weight in gold. But other than that, there's no special setup, I don't think.
Personal experience is if you can get a paper plate dispenser that works with the paper plates that you buy, then it's worth its weight in gold.
Aha. See, I haven't tested that. See? We're finding out weaknesses in my system.
Well, and I know we only have a few more seconds to this segment, but I will say this. The one thing that you need to think about, and we'll delve into this on the other side. Everything in one of these things moves.
Yeah.
So it sways back and forth. It moves, potential bumps. So you'll find when you go into Camping World, there's a lot of things. The utility is to hold it down so that you don't then open up your camper or whatever and find everything in disarray. So there you go. That's one thing to consider.
Exactly. It's kind of like on a ship, you have to have things that don't move around. Well, we are just about out of time on segment one. When we come back for segment two, we will answer the question, prepping and RVing. I mean, how do they fit together? And this will be more where perhaps David talks. Stick with us.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Shelby Gallagher here. We found that you need to layer your food preps.
Yeah, this is Glenn Tate here. A lot of times the hardest part of layering is the long-term foods. We love Numana foods, which have a 25-year shelf life and are non-GMO. Also, organic meals are available.
Numana comes in family-style portions and in bulk. This is not backpacking food. It's family meals that last for at least 25 years, the perfect freeze-dried part of your food layering.
You can get a sample of Numana meals for $19.95 and see for yourself. You will be amazed.
Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code PREP.
Go to numana.com or click the link on the Prepping 2.0 website.
Give it a try. Numana.com. That is Numana.com.
Prep PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Prepping 2.0 is all about that next level of prepping. One of the key 2.0 items to have is bulletproof body armor plates. I used to think that body armor was too tactical for a regular guy like me, but it isn't. Give yourself, your family, and your team an unfair advantage when bullets are flying. Body armor used to be expensive and hard to get. Not anymore. KD Armor, which stands for Come and Take It, makes a solid and affordable body armor for normal people. Get body armor while you can. The clowns in Congress are trying to prohibit future sales. KD Armor is the place to get it. CATIArmor.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Oh my goodness, and we're back with the show with Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. Guys, this has been an interesting conversation so far. Is it going in the direction you thought it should go?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah, this is awesome. Especially now, for newbies to this whole world. Us, yeah.
You two got to tell a tale of you buying this travel trailer and how, you know, you didn't expect the expense of the different truck and everything else. Let me tell you one thing you have to pay attention when you get into a travel trailer like the one you have over there, which that one's similar to what you have.
It is.
You notice that thing up on top of it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is, right?
It's like cooling or air conditioning.
It's an air conditioner.
Yeah.
Low overhangs will bang those things off the top of that unit like no tomorrow. Hello, Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport. I took one off in the middle of a downpour rainstorm, and it was probably... When my wife told my mother-in-law about it on the telephone later that night, I had never heard her laugh so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's sad.
But anyway, that's one of the things. If we're going to tell tales on ourselves, I'm good at taking an air conditioner off the top of a bus. I only did it once.
Yeah, you learn from those. Yes, very good.
So your question while we were sitting talking about it in the break and everything else as far as, you know, what are some of the things you need and don't need, some of the expenses you have, and what can you use this for as far as being a prepper? You know, I talked a little earlier about being able to take it and leave when an emergency pops mm-hmm. up, when you perceive an emergency pops up. So when you start thinking about the books that both y'all wrote and you have avenues of escape that you have, an RV would have been a perfect thing for you to do. Two reasons. Number one, if you had to stay in it overnight while you're on the road, that's good. Second reason is you can carry a lot more of your stuff with you. Okay, your items that you need to survive with, whether it be food, weapons, first aid material, clothing, anything else like that, it offers you, it's really nothing but a big storage trailer when you go down the road because you can't stay inside of it while it's going down the road. So fill it up with what you need, balance it out right, take it to a truck stop and get on the scales and see what you weigh fully loaded.
Good tip, guys.
Mm-hmm. And think about it, you probably have a 40-gallon fresh water tank in there.
That is correct.
Pints a pound, a world around, 16 ounces is a pound, right?
Yes.
Okay, it's really 8.3 pounds per gallon for a 40, you know, per gallon. So you multiply that times 40. So you're looking at about 341 by the time you do all the decimal points and everything else to it. And you got to think about that. Mm-hmm. You always want to travel with that travel trailer with that water tank full. Why?
Because you get thirsty. Well, of course, it's good for the tank. It's good to maintain.
Yeah, it's a flushing of the tank.
Okay, but it gets good. But these tanks don't have baffles in them. You know what I mean by that? So when you see a gas tanker going down the road, mm-hmm. they have separate tanks in there. And if they had to step on the brakes, the liquid only goes so far and it can only rebound so far. So when you start talking travel trailers and lighter weight trailers, if you've got water sloshing around in it back and forth, it can take you and make you start fishtailing. Mm-hmm. It can also push you forward or it can pull you back. So... just a little helpful hint there.
And basically what that means is there's the waves, the motion of the traveling causes waves in the water tank, which if you've ever been on waves or, you know.
Think about a waterbed.
Exactly.
And then to a waveless waterbed. That's the difference between them. So
mm-hmm, exactly.
That way you have water to drink and flush the toilets and everything else like that. So.
And here's what's the other thing is in a bug out situation, that is drinkable water that you know is drinkable water. Your water source, you have a really good water source, and you're not having to deal with purification issues.
Absolutely.
Well, some uses we've thought of, and I'm curious what you think of this. There are a couple. First of all, it's recreation and fun, and don't ever kind of take that out of the equation. It's not really prepping, but spending time with your family and having fun and seeing cool things is a really good thing. So there's that. That's probably the primary reason. I can't really say that we got the camper for purely prepping stuff, but we've figured out a couple uses. So here's some things that come to mind. You're exactly right. Bug out vehicle that's fully stocked and fully livable in. Remember, I come up with one new word or phrase in the English language every show. Livable in. It's hyphenated. Shelby's so tired of this. And so that's a huge thing. When you're bugging out, oh, by the way, you're going to use more gas than you thought when you're bugging out.
That's
thing to consider. Oh, yeah.
And the price could potentially be a lot higher than you're normally going to pay.
It's something to leave town with all your stuff pre-packed. And that alone, I think, merits an RV if you can afford it for that very thing, because that's really what the game is all about. Very few of us listening are living in rural areas and living on homesteads and all of that, where in essence, you don't need to bug out. That being said, we got to have a plan for everything. You mentioned wildfires. I mean, you could live in the best homestead area and you don't need to bug out of a city, but you need to bug out of the country, right? That could be a thing.
And the best example, most recent example that think of, and I've talked about this on our show, Paradise, California, rural location. People need to bug out. And sadly, the whole town burned down about a year ago. So that's a great example of, you might live out in the country and think you are the bug out location for everybody else, but you actually need to get out of town. Yeah.
Yeah. And some other uses we came up for with our somewhat unique setting, which is living in a very, very rural area. And we will have a lot of friends and helpers coming. I'm just going to leave it at that. You have now a place for people to live who are joining up with you. The team is coming out and all of that other kind of
stuff.
Their
families.
And their families. And it is a great temporary or perhaps permanent living facility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how livable, and this is going to depend on RVs, how livable are RVs? Because I think this is nice. The one we're in, I mean, this is like a hotel room. I got to tell you, there's no downside to living in here. Very livable. What are your thoughts on that?
The biggest challenge that you'll have is cold weather. And you have to winterize these bad boys because the water will freeze in the pipes and they'll burst. So if you ever get to the point where you decide you want to replumb yours, get some PEX pipe and you can use that. That's what's used in this one because this is called a four season. So if it freezes, it'll expand, but it won't split readily. It takes a lot to do that. Some of the older tubing, like what we had in our diesel pusher and what's probably in yours, when it freezes, it just rips that tubing to pieces. But if you put a skirt down around them, then you can use bales of straw or bales of hay.
We have those.
If you line it around it and everything else, and as long as you can provide heat source into it, whether it be propane or if you have electricity, if it's got electrical capabilities to it, you'll be surprised how warm you can stay in one of these things. Now, 40 below zero, you're going to be cold. And if you're down in the tens, the 20s, you know, halfway in between there in the teens, and you could be comfortable in one. It's going to consume a lot of energy to do that, but you can do it. Some people are even putting small wood stoves in them.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we're talking, you know, a foot wide by 2 foot wide and 3 feet tall and a pipe out of them. They're very popular around Missoula, Montana with the people that live in their RVs year round there. And they are very efficient wood burners, and they heat it up so much in there that these people are in shorts and T-shirt with the window open.
Wow. Yeah, because wood stoves do that. That's the other thing. With a small enclosed area, it gets pretty warm
pretty
quickly.
Fast.
Yep. Does real well with it.
So what are other uses that preppers can, what are other uses? I'd love to hear your ideas. I mean, we have our questions, but what are your ideas?
Well, our ideas of being able to get away from people and get out to places and get to what we call boondocking, where we go without, you know, water, power. We've got it all substantial on board here. And you can get away from the masses, the hordes, if you will. Now, living in Montana is really great because you only have 1.1 million people in that whole big state. When I used to live in the Atlanta metropolitan area, you had, 6.7 people in the metropolitan Atlanta area. And you don't realize how much population density gets to you until you go back and visit a place like Las Vegas. We were just like, there's just too many people here. But you can use that to get away from them that way. You know, we talked about recreation as far as that. You can also use it, especially if you have kids, for education. You can take them out and do things. One of the goals that I have is go and do the Lewis and Clark Trail by RV. Now, it won't go all the places they went, but it'll go the major places and be able to document that. Here we are. We're using it as a mobile podcast studio today. Mm-hmm. And we've got real nice dead sound in here, so we don't have a lot of echo. But also use it as a mobile command center if you have. Like if you have a group, what you're talking about, you can set it up as a mobile command center to be able to run all your communications and stuff out of it to keep people on the perimeter and watch what's coming towards you.
And that's one of the uses that I came up with. And one of the things that Shelby and I were really drawn to this, and that is a command post. It's mobile. It can go any place there's a road. It can go there. It has some amenities and some sleeping capacity. You can, depending on what kind of ham radio situation you have, assuming you have it, you can put antenna on these things and you can run a comms center, a true command post, a tactical operations center. If you've got a field operation and you need to have a dispatcher essentially taking in communications, sending out communications, keeping track of things, where the good guys are, where the bad guys are, and this could be like hordes of hungry people. It's not, you know, necessarily like military forces. And that would be absolutely invaluable. Plus, it's mobile, so it's going to where it needs to be. A corollary to that is, let's say your main house, your main stronghold is somewhere. You could move your command center to some other place that's more defensible or is closer to other people or is where it needs to be for whatever reason it needs to be. And you don't have to be stuck where you are. And you can go have that command post everywhere. I mean, you look at all the command posts when there's a flood or whatever, like New York City mobile command posts. They're always in modified campers or something like that because it just makes so much sense. I've done some stuff with some people, and there was a command center. And to be able to sleep in an RV bed as opposed to on the ground was quite a big morale booster, I have to say. And so that, I think, is really good for, I'm not going to say like every prepper, but preppers who are community-minded like we are, when you've got a crew showing up, it is really good to have that mobile command post. And when you couple it with communications, HF, even VHF, UHF, all those sorts of things, then you've really got something there. And this would be not only good for you and your people, I think it would be good for a community. You could go, we're talking about wildfires. Let's say you don't have wildfires. You take your camper, And which got all the comms gear and all the ways of sleeping people and hygiene and all that other stuff. And you can go and help other people. So there's a million uses for a mobile command post. And I think that a recreational vehicle of whatever kind is just extremely well suited for that. What do you guys think about that?
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
Absolutely. Well, and let me ask you this, David. So I'm going to assume we're in a very nice camper here. What have you done? What are things that you've done that you're willing to share with us that you've prepped this so that you have, obviously you use this for fun. You go to, you go to concerts in Las Vegas and things like that. But if you had to use this right now to bug out, what are things here that you've done for you?
Well, you're sitting on about 6 months worth of food underneath your butts right now.
Nice.
Wouldn't have known it.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a Faraday cage up forward, a portable Faraday cage.
Hot dog.
As I keep sensitive electronics in as far as night vision, radio communications, a shortwave radio to be able to catch up on what's going on around the world. I've got places in the bunkhouse in the back here. I can sleep four adults back there. I can sleep two adults here, two adults there, and two adults up front. But when our friends and family ask us, how many does your camper sleep? We tell them two. But no.
Missus.
And we really bought this one, to be honest with you, to be able to have that refuge to go with. But the main reason is for the bunkhouse because of the grandkids down in Florida that we're going to go visit. We couldn't sleep that many people on that big bus. This fifth wheel and that bus were the exact same length. We can sleep twice as many people on this as what we could on that bus.
It seems to me, and you're very up on, obviously, the RV technology world, it seems to me that just about every year, they figure out how to get more and more stuff in the same space in RVs and the appliances and all of that. I mean, there's a lot of innovation going on, and that's one of the Prepping 2.0 ideas is, hey guys, we're going to come on this show and tell you about new stuff and have you think about things that maybe are different than what you were used to. Is that true? I mean, I see a lot of innovation in just being in here.
Yes, true. True to a point. Every light in this coach, with exception of the what's in the microwave that shines down on the stovetop, is LED. Any of these travel trailers, fifth wheels, other RVs that don't have LED lights on it, it's a simple bulb replacement now. It's not complicated anymore. And that alone will save you on your batteries when you're boondocking. And it would, you know, what you would normally use in a lot of stuff with power consumption of the old 1156, 1157 bulbs would drain a battery dry in a couple of hours. Days. This will burn for days without going down to it. So that's something you do with it. Now, the newer RVs, they are not built as well as the older ones for the most part. The old adage, you get what you pay for, is true sometimes. But if you think about what you have right now with your travel trailer you just got, they don't build them that strong anymore.
Mm. Interesting.
They do not build them that strong anymore. So there's a whole market out there for people, that, for a prepper unit, if they're trying to do that, I'd go after one of those ones like you found build around it that way, because you just saved yourself a whole lot of money. You've got something that's probably built better and stronger. And as long as you take care of it, you're golden. Don't worry about what it looks like.
Right.
Well, and you mentioned lighting.
It looks like 1989.
It does.
It's definitely dated, but it's very comfortable. We're not in it for the sheeshiness of it.
Yeah, no, yeah. You mentioned, sorry about that, the LED lights. And it's my perception, tell me if this is right or wrong, that one of the cool things from a prepping standpoint about RVs is you've got a lot of 12-volt systems. You're not having, you know,
correct,
110. I mean, you can plug in appliances if you have a nice one and all of that, and there's inverters. But like what we have, it's 12-volt only, and that's great because I can run so many things, those bare necessity things that I need, mm-hmm, on 12 volts. And one of the cool things about 12-volt appliances, they've come a long way. I tell the story, I was at a truck stop and I was bored and I was walking around stretching my legs. I could not believe all the 12 volt appliances that truckers need. There's little refrigerators, there's crock pots for goodness sakes,
yep,
that run on 12 volts and don't draw a lot of electricity. And so you've got a 12 volt system in an RV and you got 12 volt appliances. Hot dog. That's what you need. You're sleeping a team of gunfighters and you got some beans and rice in a crock pot or two. They're smaller crock pots. You probably need two, especially the way we eat. Mm-hmm. And you're golden and you're not going up to 110 voltage and then back down. So the 12 volt it's kind of like boats in a sense. There's a lot of utility to lower voltage systems and these have these lower voltage systems.
Absolutely. It's like the refrigerators behind you could run off of 110. Or it can run off a 12-volt with propane.
Yeah.
And that's invaluable, but it's what we use it mostly done that way. And people will tell you that it just doesn't get as cold as a residential refrigerator. No, they don't. Proper planning. And what you do is you freeze a couple of jugs of water, and you put it in the refrigerator before you crank it up, let it get cold. And it got so cold in this one that the can of dog food that we have for the dogs, it froze it in the regular refrigerator. Mm. It froze the dog food. So you can get up cold.
A cost-free workaround.
So let me ask this. This is a little bit maybe, and don't answer if it's off the beaten path a little bit, but I do see, and we're sitting in the
Bonner County.
Oh my gosh, too much caffeine maybe. Bonner County Fairgrounds Campground. And I'm looking around and every now and then I see solar panels. Someone's got a solar panel array. I think
Absolutely.
That's interesting, especially as a prepper. Talk about that.
Well, behind that door right there.
There's a lot of magical doors in this
room.
Oh,
I'm telling you. You got to see my ruby slippers.
Oh, very good.
It is a 200 watt suitcase ZAMP solar panel made right in the U.S. here. It's a little more spendy than some of the cheaper ones made overseas, but it keeps working. We bought that as opposed to putting one up on the roof of the bus or the roof on this, because I can get out and I can angle it to the most advantageous position to the sun to get the most bang for my buck. Okay. $900 is about what you're going to spend on a 200 watt. And it'll supply this with everything I want except for running that on 110. Okay.
Refrigerator, I think you're pointing to.
Exactly, the refrigerator. And it won't be able to keep up with a heavy load on the microwave, but you'll be able to pop some popcorn or heat up a quick meal or something like
that. Are you serious? A solar system?
By feeding the batteries.
By charging. Wow.
That's impressive.
That is
because it has an inverter. This has an inverter that you'll take it and it converts it from 12 volt to 110 and feeds that. And that's typical on RVs, on the newer ones.
See, and it's one of these things. Technology advances and things get better. We have about 7 more minutes. One other use I thought of for a camper, RV, whatever you want to call it, and this is pretty much limited to one disaster scenario, although as I say that, it isn't, so I'll finish the sentence. That would be a quarantine area. If you've got a pandemic situation and you want to make sure that that person doesn't have that bug and it's got a, whatever, 2-week, I don't know, gestation period? What do you even call
incubation
that?
Period.
Incubation period. There you go. You could have somebody in an RV for 2 weeks, and when they emerge alive, you know that they don't have whatever that is. Now, I say it's kind of limited to a pandemic scenario, but as I said it, I realized that almost any scenario where there are not services, normal grid services, you're going to have sick people with contagious illnesses, and I think an RV would be a magnificent quarantine area. What do you guys think about that?
It can be used for that, especially after you get finished with it. You can sanitize it pretty easily. Now, I'm going to make you think back on memory tapes because I don't know how old you are, but do you remember the Apollo moon missions?
Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Okay. When they came back and they splashed down in the ocean and got carried to usually the Hornet or the Wasp or something like that, they got put into an Airstream travel trailer.
Oh, that's right.
They were in quarantine for that for so many days before they would let them out because they didn't know what they might be bringing back from outer space.
What a perfect
Simple
example.
That.
That's a great, and it's a great visual too.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really kind of interesting. So, you know, there is Airstream and you have an Airstream RV that used to take the astronauts out to the launch pad before they lit the big candle and shoot them up to it. So RVs have been taking people to go to outer space.
That is so cool. Wow.
Well, what are some questions you have for us, David?
Oh, wow. You guys have been asked this question a bunch and everything else, but I'm going to ask it again because I want it on my own tape.
Very good.
How did you two guys ever meet?
Oh, go for it, Glenn.
Are you sure? I've been talking way too much.
I'd like for you to
tell the story.
No, you do. You do
okay.
It so well.
Well, it's interesting. I wrote some books, apparently, and I get an email from somebody who's an acquaintance. So an acquaintance of mine, that was her. And she said, and I get a lot of these emails saying, I have a manuscript, I have a draft of a book, would you read it? And I always hate that because, and I don't want to be mean, but I don't have the time I just don't have the time. I don't read books at all. I mean, the only time I read books is when I'm editing one of mine or hers. I mean, that's how little time we have. But the other thing is that the manuscripts that people send me often are pretty bad. Now, there are exceptions to this. Austin Watkins sent me Cascadia Fallen and Austin Chambers. And while I didn't read it because I don't have time, it was not awful. I've got some good reports on it. So anyway, if you're listening, Austin, I'm not talking about you. Anyway, so it's this awkwardness when you get these draft books. So she was an acquaintance and I was married at the time. So it's not like I was dating her. Let's be clear about that. Mm-hmm. I read this, and it was incredibly good. And I got to chapter 3, which is, those of you who read the book, is a very visceral, horrible thing. And I texted her, and I think she was perhaps at first regretting giving me her phone number mm-hmm. for the texting. And I texted her, and I said, I'm walking around my house right now. And she said, probably thinking to herself, this guy's a weirdo. Said, okay, you're walking around your house. And I said, I'm trying to select the hammer that I want to use. And I don't know what your reaction was, but I didn't see anything as something like, okay. And I said, that's the hammer I want to select to cave that dude's face in, who was the bad guy in chapter 3. And it occurred to me, if I'm actually walking around my house.
Someone walking around their house angry with a hammer.
Thinking about ball peen or claw. I mean, as far as hammers go. That I said, if I can be moved to this sort of emotion from reading this writing, this is a book that needs to get out there. And it was obviously a prepper genre thing. It had a pro-preparedness, pro-patriot message. And then we started talking more. I was working on the book. She wrote the book. I mean, we would just have these conversations about story development and a bunch of other stuff. So that's how we met. And then after we weren't married to other people, we then became married to each other. So it's a weird thing. It was a draft book, and it's an unusual story, right?
Yeah, that is a neat story. That's a pretty good one. So ball peen or claw? You can get peened.
I went with ball peen, by the way.
And I will say this, and you wrote that story as the foreword to book one, The Divide, but also to thank you to all the fans who I can always tell when they've read book three, because they'll send me a message on social media or whatever, and they'll say, I'm looking for a hammer as well.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's very exactly. Cool.
I keep thinking about dignity domes.
Yeah,
oh, that's yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
We have about a minute, guys, in the regular segment. So, David, do you have any other questions for us?
I think we can probably hold it over to your second segment, which you have for his Patreon. So
that's right,
what
the
like
after
to do
show.
It.
That's right.
So I just appreciate you guys coming and sitting in the fifth wheel today to talk with us a little bit and see how I kind of roll on the production with the help of my bride. And we do a lot of things together. We do everything together. Matter of fact, as we drive down the road, she reads the books to me.
Oh, my wow. goodness. That is so cool.
That's very sweet.
It is absolutely fantastic. And let me tell you, we've read some pretty bad ones. Grammar is not a lot of people's strong suit.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's what I was used to saying. Well, we are so glad to be here. And we've never done this before, this joint show.
Do you like it?
Yeah, this is great. This is fantastic. It was so easy. We just breeze in and talk for a while, and you're going to do all the, you know, computer stuff. And this is great. So this has been fun. So everybody, this is simultaneously a episode of Prepping 2.0 and of RV
Prepper. Yeah, the Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
How can people find, we have about 5 seconds, RV Prepper?
rvprepper.libsyn.com. That's LIBSYN.
Excellent. That's all we have time for. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.